Shalom and welcome. I am Richard Address, Director of Jewish Sacred Aging, and we welcome you to another in our series of Jewish Sacred Aging podcasts. These podcasts hope to feature conversations that relate to issues that touch on the impact of longevity within our community. And we welcome your comments and suggestions to www.jewishsacredaging.com or to rabbiaddress@jewishsacredaging.com. And we now welcome to our podcast Rabbi Mark Levin, author of Praying the Bible, Finding Personal Meaning in the Siddur, Ending Boredom, and Making Each Prayer Experience Unique. Mark, welcome to our podcast. Thank you for joining us. And you're in Kansas, I think. And how are things in Kansas today?
I am in Kansas, and there are no tornadoes, so we're happy.
Well, good. So put your ruby slippers away and... Let's get into this. Thank you for joining us. Seriously, Mark, thank you very, very much.
My pleasure. Believe me.
Praying the Bible. This is a great subtitle. Finding Personal Meaning in the Siddur, Ending Boredom and Making Each Prayer Experience Unique. First of all, let's get to the logistics. This is just published. Published by whom?
It's published by Jewish Lights.
And available on...
Yeah, it's available everywhere, I think. It's available on Amazon. It's available in the major bookstores. It's covered by the major book suppliers in the country. So far as I know, and it's available now on a Kindle edition. I'm not sure if it's available on Nook.
Okay. So the first question, Mark, because it's a fascinating title, why this book? And equally as important, why do this at this time? What's going on?
Well, a couple of things. One is I have 40 years in the pulpit rabbinate, and it was not infrequent for people to say to me, look, what do people get out of prayer? I go because I have to. I sit there. I don't do anything. It's very repetitious, and it's boring. And the reality is that the rabbis, those are the rabbis with a capital R, the rabbis of the first five centuries, whom we refer to as Chazal, built into the Siddur, into each one of the prayers, a structure that has meaning on many different levels. So they sort of anticipated this problem, and they solved it. But unfortunately, we don't tell most of the people in the pews what the solution is. So there's a couple of solutions, but the one that has, as far as I know, the least amount of publicity, is least known in the Jewish community, is something that is hidden right in front of us. And that I say hidden right in front of us because most Siddurim, including the current Siddur of the Reform Movement, Mishkan Tefillah, but most Siddurim have biblical citations listed next to many of the prayers. For instance, after the Shema, the Micha Mocha, it'll say Exodus chapter 15. What they don't say is what those quotations are supposed to mean, why they're there, how you might use them. And the truth of the matter is that Jewish prayer is really poetic. It's really poetry. It's really the usage of an individual in his existential condition, the interplay of that with the literal meaning, the superficial meaning of the prayer, and then the quotations which say to us, bring this whole Bible story into your prayer. And what does this Bible story mean to you, given where you are now? So it's very individualized, and it changes as we change.
Yeah, that's an important point. I'd like to pursue that a little bit. I just recently did a study session with about 50 baby boomers and the generation ahead of us, and talked a lot about prayer. We use as the basis the Unetane Tokef prayer for the holidays. And what surprised me, and it shouldn't have surprised me, is that the people who were participating, the huge participation, was their desire to have a personal relationship with that prayer. As you pointed out just now, they don't want repetition and rote. They want that prayer to speak to them in their, as I think you wrote, their existential being, where they are now. How can Jewish prayer do that? And you alluded to this at this last statement. It changes as they change. Give me an example.
Yeah, so let's take the Adon Olam prayer, which is covered in the book. And Everyone knows Adon Olam. When I stand in front of a congregation and say, you know, how many of you know Adon Olam? Virtually everyone in the room raises their hand, and most people will say, Adon Olam, I've been singing it my entire life. I know it by heart. So then you say, well, do you know what it means? Well, I read the translation actually once, Rabbi. I'm not really remembering entirely what it means. Why do you ask? Well, Adon Olam, the first three stanzas set up God as being the eternal ruler of the universe. Adon Olam is a pun of the first two words. Adon Olam, it's a pun. A master of the world in space, because the Olam is the entire world, the geographic world. And Adon Olam in time, eternal ruler. And the two words mean both. So there, this in this poem by Solomon Ibn Gabirel, you have this opening where you already get this sense of this guy really knows what he's doing. This is a poem which opens with the notion of God is the God of all eternity, all space, and all time. Well, you know, I'd like to have a God like that protecting me, and I think most Jews would. So the first three stanzas really talk about how that is our God. That describes our God, a God that is Israel's protector. Well, you and I are of a certain age, and we've given thoughts to the bad things that happen in our lives, even to our mortality. So the fourth stanza goes on and says, "V'hu Eli v'chai goli." He is my God, and my Redeemer lives. Well, that's a quotation. That quotation is taken from the book of Job. Now, I suspect we all know the book of Job. For one, Job suffered without cause. He had done nothing immoral. He was God's faithful servant, and God decided to pick on him to prove a point. But poor Job didn't know that, and he loses the big three. What are the big three? First, he loses his children. Then he loses his wealth. Or first, he loses his wealth. Then he loses his children, and then he loses his health. So this is what happens to us, right? I mean, we have all suffered, but I think most of us would say, well, Job probably suffered more than me. And so we find ourselves in the character Job. And what does Job do? Well, Job's three friends come and they say to him, Job, you must have done something wrong. Clearly, these bad things that are happening in your life are because you've done something wrong. And Job says, no, I haven't. I don't know why I'm suffering, but I know that my Redeemer lives. Job's wife comes to him and says, Job, curse God and die. He says, look, you know, no, I haven't done the bad things that you all think, and I don't know why this is happening, but my life that has been good up until now, I'm suffering without cause, without any redemption to it. Well, notice that it says v'chai goali, okay? But my Redeemer lives, so there is a Redeemer. Well, we see at the end of Job's life that he does get some justification, finds out what has happened, but he has to admit, as God shows him after chapters 38 and beyond, that God really is the God of the entire universe, and we, as minute beings within the universe, really cannot understand the entirety of creation nor our place in it. Well, that's our existential condition as well. So when we walk into worship, we may be thinking about whatever stone happens to be in our shoe that day, whether it's a personal illness or something happening to someone that we love, or we're awaiting unfortunate news, or maybe everything's good. In which case, I don't know, Adon Olam may not be the particular prayer that you want, maybe another prayer. But it goes on, not only that quotation, but King David in Psalm 23, my cup runneth over, right? In Psalm 23, what says, Menat kosi b'yom ekra, the portion of my cup when I call upon him. Well, that's a reference to King David. There's a reference to Moses, V'hu nisi umanos li. That's from the attack by the Amalekites on the Israelites, and Moses sets up a sign so that the Israelites can look at it and have faith, and when they look at it, they will triumph. So these are references that say, look, the great heroes of Jewish history, Moses, David, Job, all of them have suffered as I suffer. And they have all borne with it. And they have all been able to live with their suffering and nonetheless made great meaning out of their lives. And if they have, certainly I can do that as well. So Adon Olam is a great justification for our existential condition, given that, you know, everything may not be perfect in our lives at this stage.
So I think in the process of describing the book, you talk about the idea of prayer and the prayer book almost being like a curriculum, if I can use that word, for our life. So talk to me a little bit about the structure. How did you arrive at this, the structure of this book? What is the structure? Walk us through what this book looks like.
I had the opportunity, through the graciousness of Jewish Lights, to write a book that would be able to be used by the folks who are educated modern people, educated modern Jews, who are interested in their spirituality and probably have a great level of expertise in some area in which they perhaps have been making a living or some hobby area, but maybe not a great level of expertise in Judaism. So the prayer book has in it, and this is regardless of which prayer book we use, any movement prayer book, has in it, besides the different services, the services are comprised of what we call rubrics. And three of those rubrics that people probably are familiar with are the Shemonitz blessings, the Tefillah, or another name for it is the Amidah, the standing prayer, or another name for it is the Shemona Esrei. And the third one is the Torah service. Well, there wasn't enough space in a book that somebody might be able to get a grasp on to do all three of those. And so I chose the Tefillah, the Amidah, the standing prayer. And what I did was take each one of the prayers and look at the major biblical citations that appear in each one of them and talk about the overall theme of the Amidah, the overall theme that we often are not aware is there, and then break it down into the theme of each one of the prayers, and then what you can learn from each one of the biblical citations and where we might find ourselves in those citations. So the point of each prayer is you might find yourself and your particular condition at that moment in any one of these prayers. Traditionally, Jews have known the Tefillah well enough, but when they're davening, they can daven it by rote. But you might want to home in on, focus in on one of the prayers and one of the citations that happens to speak to you that day, that moment, what's going on in your life. So the overall theme of the Tefillah is redemption. Well, what is redemption? In a modern context, redemption may be afterlife, but it's more likely for all of us, the meaning that we get from our lives, how to build ultimate meaning into your life. So I try to point out in various anecdotes when I'm looking at these citations how this might work in terms of someone's life today. For instance, in the redemption prayer, I talk about the life of a man who's now known as Natan Sharansky, but at one time was Anatoly Sharansky, the great Soviet refusenik, a dissident, and had, what he had to go through and the faith that carried him forward such that he was able to triumph over the Soviets and be freed. But he suffered considerably during that time. And what does a person do to find such strength in the midst of adversity?
So the levels, and I think you in one piece of writing that you shared about the book, use that image of mining the text, the different levels that may be apparent to the in these prayers, the ability, depending upon, I would imagine, where one is in one's life to reach a different level or a different appreciation or understanding, which leads me to ask you this question, because you alluded to it before. When we're sitting in the congregation and you've led, as you said, several decades worth of congregations in prayer and converse with congregants who struggle in a variety of ways, not everybody believes in that supernatural creator, pardoner, redeemer, Adon Olam, prayer God. And talk to me how you walk through that dilemma to that, as you said, the market, the educated modern Jew who may have moved off a supernatural God concept and maybe searching for something that makes sense to them. How does that prayer, how does this mining the prayer book relate to them? Can you talk to me about that?
Sure. This is one of the hidden components of Jewish prayer that I particularly like, because many of my friends are caught up on this notion of doubt. Now, what I say to them is, look, we discovered doubt in theology with the philosophy of Descartes 350 years ago. Everyone doubts. So get accustomed to it. You don't have 100% certainty. Certainly, you don't have 100% certainty about prayer. But I do believe that there is a God in the universe with whom I can have some sort of communication. Now, if it not everyone believes that, but some people, I like to say about the about our Jews that they're so devoted to social justice. The God in whom they don't know whether they believe commands them to go out and be just. So that justice is found in our Siddur, in the prayer about rewarding the righteous. And what is the reward for the righteous? There's also a prayer in there, and I not only talk about the prayer about the heretics, but I also talk about where the same thing appears in the Passover Haggadah. Just bring that in the same context, and how some people today have taken that and turned it around to appreciating those who love us, those who show us beneficence. One can converse with the ideas in Jewish history. The last three prayers of the Tefillah, prayers known as the prayers of Thanksgiving, which the prayer for acceptance would say, the prayer of Thanksgiving itself, the Hoda'ah, and the Shalom prayer, the peace prayer, all of these allude to another period of time, a period of time in which Jews did in fact offer sacrifices. So, of course, we can find ourselves in those prayers in the sense of God, please accept my prayer, but then also thanksgiving for life. And a request for peace. And where is there peace in my life? And how do I work for that? But at the same time, there's an historical, strong historical allusion there that we've never told people about, in which the rabbis are saying, this is the same thing as if we were offering the daily sacrifice. So I know many people who may not be very firm on their conviction about the existence of a personal God, but they are very firm about their connection with Jewish history. They are very firm about being the continuity of a people that's been around for 4,000 years and today has returned to a homeland in the land of Israel. And so they to be enabled to find their place in Jewish history, in the words of Jewish history and the ideas of Jewish history, which does not require a theological concept. It's just to find our own place among our ancestors as the continuation of that and dealing with the same ideas, although perhaps we find our own solutions. So this gives a sense of context to our lives. It gives a sense of individual meaning to our lives, places us in the context of history, and enables us to relate to the worldwide Jewish community today, all of it without having necessarily to have a personal theology.
And all of that is through the power of prayer, correct?
All of that is through the power of prayer, but not necessarily the power of prayer, meaning communicating with an eternal being, like in Adon Olam, but perhaps with the eternality of the Jewish people, which is also an aspect of our prayer. And historically the case, it's not like somebody made this up today. It's been this way for 2,000 years.
So as a congregational rabbi, give me your definition of, you know, you talk about prayer, you've written a book about prayer. What is prayer to you?
Yeah, prayer is in point of fact many things. It's not a single thing. So let me say why. I believe Judaism historically has believed that there is a greater power in the universe to which we can relate. But that greater power is so different from us that there is an abyss between us, and it some might consider it to be impossible to cross that abyss. When we talk about God communicating with us, and I would say there's two ways that historically we have said God communicates with us. One is God created the world. So in deciphering the world, and that could be science, for instance, in deciphering the world, we learn something about God. So the creation testifies not only to the existence of a creator, but to the aspects, to it sort of describes the creator. So that's one. And the second way that God crosses that that gap is through revelation. And revelation meaning that you can find God in the texts of the Jewish people. When Jews go the other way, or when people actually go the other way, when it's not God communicating with us, but it's us attempting to communicate with God, we call it prayer. And so these are the attempts that human beings have launched, and I would say cross-culturally, to discover and to have some sort of communication with the power that is at the heart of the universe. So I historically, I've been studying this for 50 years now, have looked at the various ways in which people try to find within their own lives some sense of the existence of otherness within the universe and some way to communicate with that otherness. So humanity has arrived at several different ways. It's universal, whether that be the words of prayer, whether that be meditation, whether that be fasting, whether that be the various different techniques of what we call Kabbalah or universally is called mysticism. These are techniques that human beings have developed, which human beings cross-culturally have found help us to intuit, to sense the presence of something greater than ourselves that we can encounter that somehow can relate to us as well. So for me, that's prayer. Use of the prayer book enables me to do that specifically. And one of the reasons is because I believe, and I decided this, frankly, as a teenager 50 years ago, that it required me to get a great familiarity with one aspect of this communication. So whether it's a person who meditates and meditates frequently, or someone who prays and knows the prayers very well and is used to them and it's a regular component of their lives, the more depth we have, the easier that communication becomes.
And prayer is not to you just the words in a book. Prayer can be?
No, the words from a book are the launch pad for our own communication, thank you, for our own communication with the divine. Those words in and of themselves stimulate the thoughts and the actions and the communication with the divine. They are not in and of themselves the communication with the divine. It's where we go from there that is the actual prayer. So, for instance, you know, one time in my life, I suffered considerably with some back pain. I suspect that there are other people listening to this podcast who maybe had the same thing. So in my pain, I uttered a number of prayers. Did those prayers in and of themselves communicate? No, but the fervency, the emotion, my sense of my part in the greater universe and how my life had been better and at this particular point was lower. Those things are the prayer. But the prayers themselves, the words, stimulate me to get to a higher level, to a better point. And also, by the way, connect me with ancestors. I mean, I particularly love uttering words that have been spoken by other generations.
And the generations thing, it's probably a good way to mention this. I mean, on the Amidah, that first paragraph, the Avot, right? Talk to you. You unpack that, the God of Abraham, God of Isaac, God of Jacob, the matriarchs, the patriarchs. That really is it sets the stage, does it not, for that entire prayer, because it's a linkage prayer to generations and generations and history, et cetera.
Yes, it is precisely that, but it is two other things as well. Well, how does one say this? That quotation is found not only in the revelation of the burning bush at Exodus chapter 3, which is Moses' call to prophecy. It is also found in the book of Nehemiah. And so we connect not only with the generation of the wilderness, but also after the destruction of the first temple, the generation that returned. Now, Nehemiah's generation is very much like our generation today with the rebuilding of the state of Israel, where the Jewish people have a homeland that is their own, our own, for only the third time in history. So there's that as well. But then there's one other aspect to it, and that is that the closing word, Magen Avraham, closing words, are a revelation to Abraham in Genesis chapter 15. And in that same spot, Abraham is promised that his people will go into slavery, but ultimately be redeemed after 400 years, will be brought out of wherever that is. So what you have here is Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. Okay, but also Moses at the burning bush, and the connection between the two of it was always part of God's plan that we would go into some sort of servitude. Why? In order to be brought out, in order to serve God, which is what we have done for the last 3,000 plus years. So where do you find yourself in that service? You know, how does each one of us individually then choose what is our burning bush? What is our sense of Magen Avraham, the shield of Abraham? What is our shield? What is our burning bush? What is our moment in which we find ourselves as saying, okay, I too have a mission as part of the Jewish people?
So before we end this, the podcast, Mark, and again, thank you very, very much. A real practical question, because there may be colleagues or educators listening to this. How would you best describe the best way to make use of praying the Bible?
You know, if to start at the beginning, so pick a prayer, perhaps. Well, read the introduction, because that will tell you how it works. And then I would say read at least one of the chapters. So maybe pick a prayer that you like. The simplest one in there is Adonai Sfatai Tivtach. Ufi Agiti Ilatecho, Lord, open my lips that my mouth may declare your glory, that many people I find like and relate to. So maybe read that chapter. And then if you want to read, obviously, about another prayer, you can do that. But also the summary at the end in chapter 12 may be very helpful to people to know about the whole enterprise of the book. And then knowing that and considering that and trying it with a particular prayer. So I would say, take a look at a particular prayer and take a look at those quotations. Now, the uniqueness about this book is that I bring the whole quotation. You don't have to go to the Bible and look it up, but consider the story in the quotation. Think about how that story relates to your own life, what that might mean to you, where you find yourself. And I try in all the chapters to relate something personal that says, here's where I find myself in that story. And then go back and look at the prayer and maybe even attend a synagogue and look at the prayer and say, okay, where do I, given this biblical story that's in this prayer, where do I find myself in that story? Where do I find myself in the literal meaning of this prayer? How do the two combine with my existential situation, what I'm feeling today, where I find my relationship to that which is eternal? And play with it in terms of a prayer at a time and see how that might go for you.
We've been speaking with Rabbi Mark Levin, the author of Praying the Bible, Finding Personal Meaning in the Siddur, Ending Boredom and Making Each Prayer Experience Unique. It's available at Amazon and probably at your local bookstore, published by Jewish Lights. And I want to thank you, Mark, for being with us. It's and good luck with this. It's exciting and gives us countless opportunities, I think, for creative education throughout the generations, really, as you point out, using the prayer book as a basic curriculum. Thank all of you for listening again to Jewish Sacred Aging's podcast series. All of these podcasts are archived on our website, www.jewishsacredaging.com. Again, we welcome your comments and suggestions to rabbi@jewishsacredaging.com. We invite you to visit the website and the site's Facebook page, and we look forward to greeting you again at our next session, and thank you for your support and attention. And a reminder that these podcasts are recorded through the facilities of Lubetkin Media in Cherry Hill, New Jersey. Take care. We look forward to being with you again, Lehitar Ot, and thank you, Mark, again for an exciting conversation.
That was an enormous pleasure. Thanks very much.
Lehitar Ot, everybody.